Hello, this is the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. My name is Naomi Lambert from the North Carolina Reading Service, and for the next half hour, I will share articles with you from The Assembly, which publishes in-depth reporting on North Carolina at theassemblync.com. Starting with an article on economic development today by Terry Saylor, and the article is A Rural County's Tax Squeeze. Last month, Sarah Lee of Lillington got a shock when she opened a new property appraisal notice for her 1,040 square foot manufactured home. 4 years ago, when Harnett County last conducted revaluations for tax purposes, her home was appraised at $31,312. The county appraised the home at $134,097 in 2026. That's an increase of more than $100,000. Lee's home's annual tax values had varied since it was built in 2003 and priced at $57,050, according to Zillow data. The COVID pandemic and local development drove home prices up in the county, which is between Raleigh and Fayetteville. But Lee was not prepared for a $100,000 increase in just over 4 years. We've been paying in the range of $300 per year in taxes, and I don't feel this much increase is fair, she said. When property values increase, officials typically lower the tax rate to maintain stable funding for government services. The current tax rate in Harnett County is 59.1 cents per $100 in value, and the county has not yet set a new rate for the coming years. But Lee still expects to pay more in property taxes, which she said would hurt. Lee and her husband Robert already downsized from two cars to one as inflation drove their costs up. He is a state government employee and she volunteers as a family advocate, helping reunite children in government care with their parents. I feel like my husband and I are contributing positively to our community, and I'm not the kind of person that shirks responsibility as a citizen, she said. Lee is not alone. Homeowners across Harnett County have been complaining in social media forums and lining up at county commission meetings to express their outrage over their rising home values. According to the NC Department of Revenue, Harnett is one of 12 counties going through a reappraisal in 2026, and property owners across the state have balked at the increased valuations. State lawmakers have pounced on the issue. Both House and Senate leaders have called for property tax relief for homeowners, which is expected to be a top agenda item in the legislative short session that begins later this month. Local leaders, meanwhile, are concerned those changes might constrain their ability to fund schools, road repairs, infrastructure upgrades, and other needs in growing communities. Putting this budget together for the many years that we have, we understand our revenue sources and the demand for those services. And until you trade shoes with somebody trying to provide those services, limiting tax revenue makes it very difficult, to Deputy Harnett County Manager Coley Price. North Carolina law requires counties to update property values at least once every 8 years. Harnett County does it every 4 years. For this round, field appraisers reviewed more than 73,000 parcels, including residential, commercial, agricultural, and industrial properties. Marge Morton, market manager at the Fuquay Varina Growers Market, said the value of her home in the Kipling community near Lillington increased by $50,000 this cycle. She points to the county's sprawling landscape of housing developments as the main culprit for the rising home values. Proximity to the wealthier Wake and Johnston counties has helped turn Harnett into a bedroom community. Its population has swelled by about a third in the last 15 years, from 115,000 in 2010 to 153,800 in 2025, according to the US Census. Developers are snapping up swaths of farmland and green spaces to convert to subdivisions. Long-time residents complain that the growth has led to declining and overcrowded schools, increased road traffic, and a strain on public utilities. According to the North Carolina Association of County Commissioners, property taxes are the largest funding source for counties to provide essential services and programs, accounting for approximately 61% of general fund revenue. Other sources are sales tax collections, state and federal grants, fees and permits, and special taxes. Price says school construction, expanding water and sewer capacity, and improving roads sit atop the county's list of priorities. But they are expensive projects. The middle school we're building is costing about $85 million. And our next school on the radar will be Highlands High School, Price said. We're getting estimates on that ranging from $120 million to $150 million. A new water plant with a 20 million gallon water capacity is estimated to cost $400 million, Price said. The county's poverty rate is 13.2%, slightly higher than the state overall. Morton says she worries about the cost of living, and she lobbied the county commissioners to build a permanent farmers market in Lillington that will provide vouchers to low-income seniors for fresh produce in the summer. With electricity bills that are through the roof, rising property values, and social services and healthcare being slashed, I don't know what's going to happen, she said. North Carolina offers property tax relief for seniors and disabled homeowners, including a homestead exclusion for residents 65 or older whose 2025 income doesn't exceed $38,800, and an exclusion that exempts up to $45,000 of the appraised value for veterans with a service-connected disability. Harnett is considered a moderately stressed Tier 2 county, with annual wages averaging $45,888, according to the Economic Development Partnership of North Carolina. The designation allows the county to receive grants that help pay costs associated with economic development, including infrastructure and job development. But despite its residential growth, the county remains largely rural. The industrial boom across the county line in Holly Springs, home to behemoths like Fujifilm Biotechnologies, Securus, and Amgen, hasn't reached Harnett County. Last September, the county broke ground on its first Class A industrial building, which is eventually projected to offer more than 800,000 square feet of space across six buildings. Some residents say the county needs to encourage a stronger commercial sector to take the pressure off homeowners. Neighboring Johnston County also transitioned from a rural area to a bedroom community, and over the last decade, it has lured manufacturing and pharmaceutical facilities, a path local leaders think Harnett County could follow. The burden of trying to pay for schools, infrastructure, roads, EMS, law enforcement, and other services is on the backs of our residential taxes, says Joe Langley, who is retired and serves on the board of the Chamber of Commerce in Anja. Additional businesses would help pay for some of the infrastructure and schools we need and support growth. Langley owns about 40 acres of property outside of Anja. Most of it is farmland, which he rents to a local farmer for $3,000 a year, he says. He gets tax breaks from the state for the farmland because it's in use, but he also owns two houses. One of them was valued at $282,176 in 2022, according to Zillow. County records show his new appraisal for 2026 coming in at $394,912. I get offers on my farmland all the time, Langley says. And let's just say the offers are in the range of $25,000 an acre, which means I'm sitting on $1 million worth of land. And I'm renting it out for $3,000 a year because I don't want to sell it. And it's all the farmer can afford. In 2025, as complaints about property revaluations heated up around the state, NC House Speaker Destin Hall appointed a committee of 29 lawmakers to offer ideas for homeowner relief. On March 18th, the committee voted to draft a constitutional amendment that would require the General Assembly to enact legislation that would restrict how much local governments can increase property taxes. The proposed amendment doesn't spell out how those increases would be restricted. Lawmakers would determine how to do that in future legislation. The committee is expected to finalise the proposed amendment and approve it today. And the date of this report is, bear with me, the 15th of April, which is in fact today. Let me get back to where I was. To make it onto the November general election ballot, the amendment would need to be approved by at least 3/5 of both the House and the Senate by early September. The House committee is also considering limiting tax exemptions for some categories of non-profits, including hospitals, and closing loopholes in property tax exemptions for low and moderate income housing units. In February, State Senate leader Phil Berger proposed a one-year moratorium on property tax revaluation changes to give the General Assembly time to consider potential legislative changes. He formed an ad hoc committee of 10 Republican senators to study property tax options. Senator Jim Bergin, who represents Harnett County, is among them and says the committee is meeting today to discuss possible legislation. He predicted that bills will be filed in the short session that convenes on April 21st. I think you're going to see a moratorium bill introduced, and you're going to see some very thoughtful ideas about dealing with property tax, he said. According to Kiplinger, most states impose some types of property tax limits. North Carolina currently caps its property tax rate at $1.50 per 100 valuation. State Representative Erin Paré, whose district includes Holly Springs and Fuquay-Varina, says her constituents have been crying out for property tax relief, especially senior citizens on fixed incomes. Wake County conducted reappraisals last year. They're retirees and many have owned their homes for a long time, she said. They've paid property taxes diligently for many years and their home values have gone up dramatically. She described the proposed constitutional amendment as a way for North Carolina's voters to give the General Assembly the authority to cap property tax increases without limiting ways to do so. It's prudent and appropriate for the people to tell us they want us to do that, she said. But State Representative Maria Savania, a Wake County Democrat who represents portions of Cary and is a former Wake County Commissioner, said she is not sure a constitutional amendment is the answer to taxpayers' concerns. She said voters have already charged their representatives with looking out for their best interests. She also said tax limits might restrain cities and counties' revenue without measurably relieving homeowners' burdens. People in Harnett County, Wake County, and others across the state love their communities because of what their property taxes pay for, she said. We're already struggling with paying our law enforcement and teachers and educating our children while keeping up with our parks and infrastructure. So we need to be careful with our decisions. Paré counters that counties should rein in their expenses. According to the UNC School of Government, the state requires counties to pay for things such as public schools, law enforcement, jails, court facilities, and social services. In addition, counties may fund emergency medical services, fire protection, water and sewer services, solid waste collection and disposal, community colleges, libraries, parks and recreation, hospitals and tax collection. Once you get into adding on expenses, and that's decision making at the local level, then these budgets are pretty big, Paré said. I think there's a lot of people that would like to see those expenditures be brought back down to what the core functions local government is supposed to be paying for. Kevin Leonard, Executive Director of the NC Association of County Commissioners, says a constitutional amendment giving the legislature the power to limit county taxation could fundamentally change local government. The debate that the legislators are having, which is disguised as a property tax debate, is really about basic roles of government, he said. I think voters need to decide where they want those decisions that affect their backyards to be made, he said. If they want those decisions to be made in Raleigh, they may lose their voice because they aren't necessarily going to travel to the state capital to speak out, when they can just go to their county commissioners' meetings and make their voices heard. One problem counties face, especially those that are low income or rural, is that they have few options for generating revenue besides property taxes. Mecklenburg County voters last year approved a plan to raise its sales tax to pay for a sweeping transportation improvement plan. But that option hasn't gotten much attention in the significantly more rural Harnett County. Property owners have zeroed in on the idea of charging impact fees on developers and home builders. These are one-time charges on new developments to fund things like roads, schools and parks. Price, the deputy county manager, says he and county manager Brent Trout have presented resolutions on relief measures to Bergen and state reps Howard Penny Jr. and Joseph Pike, also Republicans. We are looking for some relief from the burden this tremendous amount of growth is putting on us, Price said. And whether that's sales tax or impact fees for schools, we're looking at every single angle. The North Carolina Supreme Court held in 2016 that counties and municipalities could not charge impact fees when approving a subdivision. Under North Carolina law, counties and municipalities only have the authority the state legislature specifically grants them, said Ted Hennessy, a partner with Robinson Bradshaw, whose clients include real estate developers and construction firms. In 2017, the General Assembly passed a law letting local governments impose fees on new developments for prospective services, like water and sewer infrastructure. They must follow a lengthy process, including a written engineering analysis, a public comment period, and a formal resolution or ordinance, Hennessy said. There is an element of guesswork here, but it seems reasonable to forecast that the trend since 2017 has been to grant local government more authority to impose fees on developers to address the infrastructure costs associated with new development, he said. Limiting the ability of local government to increase property taxes may increase incentives to shift such costs to developers. Bergen, on the other hand, told the Assembly he doesn't think local impact fee legislation would pass, and he said he thinks there are other ways to reduce property tax burdens, including spurring industrial growth in the county. The county has grown at a disproportionate rate, and you can't put it all on the backs of the taxpayer, he said. If you don't have that economic engine of commercial investment, it's hard for residential to pay the load. Lee, whose property value jumped by $100,000, has appealed her valuation and is waiting to resolve it. She wonders if she will be able to afford higher taxes after the new rate is established. She hopes any amenities the tax revenue buys, like parks, stores and transportation improvements, will extend to her part of the county. As a citizen, I would be supportive of paying for things that we need while we're growing, but if we don't receive those things, it doesn't really give us any incentive to pay more taxes, she said. I'm happy to pay my share, but it has to be fair. Next, we have a shorter piece from the Courts and Justice Department. Charlotte Mann found incapable of proceeding to trial in Irina Zarutska case. And this is by Michael Hewlett. So, I'm going to read the article and then there's an update at the top. Dekalas Brown, the man accused of fatally stabbing a Ukrainian refugee last year in a Charlotte light rail train, has been deemed mentally incapable of proceeding to trial, according to a court document. On Tuesday, Brown's attorneys filed a motion in Mecklenburg Superior Court seeking to continue what is known as a Rule 24 hearing, in which a judge determines whether prosecutors can pursue the death penalty. Brown was evaluated at Central Regional Hospital, a state psychiatric hospital in Granville County, in December after his attorneys expressed concern about his mental state. A December 29, 2025 report indicated that Brown was incapable to proceed to trial, according to the motion filed by one of his attorneys, Daniel Roberts. The next step will be a capacity hearing in Mecklenburg Superior Court, at which a judge will determine if Brown should stand trial. Roberts said in the motion that the hearing can't happen while Brown is in federal custody. In addition to first-degree murder, Brown also faces a federal charge alleging he committed an act of violence resulting in death on a mass transportation system. State and federal prosecutors are seeking the death penalty. The evaluation of Brown is a significant development in a case that has grabbed national headlines and has been used by Republicans to blame Democrats for being soft on crime. Surveillance cameras in August 2025 captured the brutal stabbing of Irina Zarutska, 23, who had come to the United States from war-torn Ukraine. That September, the footage was publicly released and went viral, reaching all the way to the White House. In February, President Donald Trump invited Zarutska's mother to the State of the Union, where he called Brown a deranged monster and falsely claimed that he came through open borders. Brown was born in Charlotte. That same month, the NC House Oversight Committee held a hearing in which Republican legislators lambasted Charlotte leaders over Zarutska's death. After her death, a Republican-led General Assembly passed a bill named for her, and Governor Josh Stein, a Democrat, signed it last year. Among other things, the new law restricts pre-trial release and seeks to revive the long-dormant death penalty. Roberts asked for the Rule 24 hearing to be continued for 6 months. A judge has not yet ruled on the motion. Brown is undergoing a separate psychological evaluation in the federal prison system. A report from that evaluation is expected later this month. If Brown is deemed mentally incompetent to stand trial, a judge will have to hold a capacity hearing in federal court. The state case is also at a standstill while Brown is in federal custody. Brown won't go to trial in either court until questions surrounding his mental state are resolved. Brown, 35, had a long history of mental illness that seemed exacerbated in the last year before Zarutska was killed. He had been in and out of the criminal justice system, mostly for minor crimes such as breaking and entering and shoplifting. His most serious crime was armed robbery, for which he served a 73-month sentence. There were other arrests indicating potential violent tendencies, such as an alleged assault on his sister, but none led to convictions. Starting in 2024, his interactions with Charlotte Mecklenburg police suggested he was spiraling into a mental health crisis. On April 21st, 2024, officers were dispatched to the Novant Health Presbyterian Medical Center 5 times because a schizophrenic individual, Brown, kept calling 911, according to an incident report. That night, Brown moved a couple of blocks away and continued to call 911, requesting help when it was not needed, according to the incident report. Police arrested him for misusing the 911 system, a misdemeanor. 2 weeks later, Brown was arrested again for repeatedly calling 911 from outside the Charlotte police headquarters. Dylan Sharp, an attorney who represented Brown, told the Assembly that prosecutors took one of those cases to trial, where Brown was found not guilty. The other charge was dismissed, Sharp said. In 2025, police again went to Novant Health Presbyterian Medical Center, where Brown had been repeatedly calling 911. According to a charging document, Brown told officers that he believed someone had gave him a man-made material that controlled what he ate, walked, talked, etc. Brown wanted officers to investigate this man-made material that was inside of his body. When officers said they couldn't help him, Brown called 911 again and asked to speak with different officers. Police again arrested him for misusing 911. That charge is pending. So up to the update at the top. The U.S. Attorney General's Office for the Western District of North Carolina issued a statement emphasizing that Brown remains in federal custody and that the state proceedings, including competency hearings, are completely separate. Also, Emma Hall, a Republican National Committee spokeswoman, released a statement blaming former Governor Roy Cooper, a U.S. Senate candidate, for releasing Brown early through a 2021 lawsuit settlement. It is shameful that Roy Cooper continues to dodge accountability for the role he played in helping release this monster and for his record that turned North Carolina into a haven for violent criminals. As we previously reported, that allegation is false. Brown was not released early. Final article, Guilford County Brushes Off a Burger Theory by Brian Anderson. In his unsuccessful quest to overcome his deficit to Rockingham County Sheriff Sam Page, State Senate leader Phil Berger filed four election protests challenging the ballots of 13 voters, 8 in Guilford County and 5 in Rockingham. One of his protests of the March 3rd GOP primary argued that at least 8 eligible voters in Senate District 26 may have received ballots that wrongly excluded the Page-Berger race. Berger's campaign didn't name the people who might have gotten an incorrect ballot, but said several of them claimed to have voted early. While Berger ultimately conceded defeat before the counties held evidentiary hearings on the protests, election officials kept checking out some of his complaints. In a report recently provided to the State Board of Elections and obtained by the Assembly, Guilford County's election director pushed back on the allegation that some people got an incorrect ballot. The irregularities noted in the protest allegations are highly unlikely to have occurred at the Guilford County early voting sites, Charlie Collicutt wrote. Collicutt said he reached that conclusion because there were no ballot distribution errors identified during the canvassing period, the time after Election Day, when the board determines that votes have been counted correctly, or in a precinct-level analysis of early voting ballots. Representatives for Berger didn't respond to a request for comment. We have run out of time for today's episode of the Assembly. We hope you enjoyed it. I'm Naomi Lambert for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. This broadcast is now available as part of as a podcast or on our website, ncreadingservice.org. So long until next time, and please call us on 919-832-5138. That's 919-832-5138.